This is George Skivington. You're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 19 of Series 4 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, Jim Harley, and glad to have him back, James Eastwood, also known as Snowy. Russ is otherwise engaged. We think Lawrence is crying over Brighton, giving Liverpool a good hammering. That's our assumption. We don't know entirely.
Well, that's your assumption, Ed, because I don't know anything about any football result until you told me.
No, that's true. And to be fair, this is one of the very, very, very rare weekends that my football team won. And particularly, even more rare is the fact they beat Everton, who they haven't beaten since 1997 away.
Anyone can beat Everton.
Apart from Southampton, who haven't beaten them away in the league since 1997. So, miraculous.
Lawrence will be drinking because of Liverpool's loss, and he doesn't come on the pod after he's been drinking anymore.
No, no. Although it would be more entertaining, but no, he doesn't do that. Right, we are going to be talking about the Gloucester-Leinster game. As much as we don't want to, but it was a good lesson, I think, for all Gloucester fans to understand exactly where we are in our progression and our journey. Not very far, if we're being honest. Talk about the actual experience. I thought the atmosphere was great. The game itself, Snowy, in his own admission, didn't see a lot of the game, has watched most of it on highlights, but he'll give his 2 pence worth. We'll talk about the competition generally and how odd it is. We've kind of mentioned this before, but it is, now we know what every team's got to do in the last round, it's fairly clear that it is a stupid format. And then Snowy's going to have an opportunity to add his thoughts to some of the things that have been happening over the last couple of weeks. It'll be really interesting to hear that, particularly as someone who watches it on telly, whereas myself and Jim and Loz tend to watch it live. So I think Snowy has a much different perspective to us. But we'll start off with the Gloucester-Leinster game. Gloucester were well and truly hammered, really. 49-12 to Leinster. And it was all over by half-time. Jim, your thoughts of the day? You were doing some moonlighting behind the bar in the Pelican before and after the game. Fair play. But your thoughts on the game?
I thought Leinster were horrendously good. they kind of, I think it was quite early on, it might have been their first try, they just ran kind of four different attack lines. Each of them was a serious option. And they, to be fair, they could have probably passed to two of those options and they'd have both gone in unopposed. But yeah, kind of, they just hit the line with so much speed compared to us, where generally speaking we catch the ball standing still, and it's only through brute strength do we actually, you know, get beyond the gain line a meter or so. Whereas actually, if we were running as fast as these guys were, we'd be breaking half tackles, we'd be really on the front foot. So I think it's definitely shown you know, something to aspire to. I was really, really pleased with the support. As you said, I was working up until half 12. Funny one, actually, 1 o'clock kickoff.
Yeah, sort of not a fan, I'll be honest. Dynamic a little bit.
So I arrived about quarter to kickoff, and it was really nice to see like all those blue flags in the shed, because I mean, I expected them to be in the shed, to be honest, a bit like the Exeter fans like to. Whereas a lot of other supporters, generally, they'll get their seats and they'll be quite happy and they leave us alone in the shed. So that was really nice. Lots and lots of socks, you know, song singing, really good banter. And just in the pubs after, just everywhere you looked, just Leinster supporters, which is brilliant. It kind of, I mean, I stayed out till midnight, which I probably shouldn't have done, but soaking up the crack. And it was like a proper Heineken Cup weekend kind of atmosphere, and it kind of reminded me really what those week, you know, what those fixtures are like, especially with the you know, travelling support that the likes of Leinster and Munster have. I just thought it was a really, really good day out, even after getting beaten so comprehensively. I didn't get too upset during the game because I never really expected to win. Would have been nice. I think there was a moment, certainly was a moment, 14-35, I think it was.
Mm.
If we'd have scored and taken it to 21, then all of a sudden, we got a chance of a couple of bonus points, maybe even a win, maybe sneak it. But then they just they went, nah.
I felt that, again, I'm like you, Jim. I think I said to you yesterday anyway, I couldn't get too excited or get too upset about losing. If we'd won yesterday, it would have been the biggest win we've ever had. And I mean, in the professional era, I don't think there's really an argument. In the professional era, that would have been the biggest win Gloucester's ever had. But we didn't look like we were going to do it. Within the first 4 minutes, they scored a really well-worked try, as you said. I watched that replay off the top of that line out, and I watched it four times, and I know which player's going to get the ball, but I still get confused. So God knows what it was like for the players. And then, of course, they did that other short ball.
The tap and go.
Tap and go, which, again, brilliant. Incredible execution. Brilliant and clever way of moving the ball around the lines. Beaten by the better side. I don't think necessarily Gloucester played badly as such. I don't think we played well. I don't think we were anywhere near as good as we could have been. But there was moments in the game, as you said, Jim, where we seemed to sort of get a bit of momentum, 5-10 minutes of pressure or play, but we're so inaccurate, particularly with the backs.
I was really pleased to see Penalty get a start. I thought he had a great game.
We were joking in the stands whether if it was a third penalty try, does the ref keep the ball? I don't know what's the... But yeah, I mean, Snow, I know you didn't watch a huge amount of it live. You've seen a lot of the highlights. Just to get your sort of views on, did you expect anything else? Did you think, we could hold a bit of hope because it was a stronger side than we put out?
No, I didn't expect anything else because I'm a realist.
Yeah, true. I know.
But I kind of like, in a way, I like those games because they give you a bit of a slap around the face and say, sometimes we get a bit excited about mediocrity. And we're probably for where we are in the league, we're as far away from the top of Europe than we've ever been. I can't remember such a golfing class from the top of Europe. There was a time when we were doing worse in the league, arguably, but we were much more competitive at that top level.
But you say that, Snowy, but I think there's a massive gap between the top
Leinster and everyone else and the top French team. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's part of it. Those three teams just miles away from everyone else.
Yeah, and we've talked about how the salary cap has been great for the Premiership rugby. And if you look at that, like all of the teams that stick to the salary cap are within a few points in the Premiership. I think it's fair to say it probably is having an impact in terms of how competitive the teams are in Europe.
Yes.
Because it's difficult with Ireland, of course, because they are the Irish teams. If you look at Leinster, they are packed full of Irish players. They were missing some of their top Irish players yesterday.
Well, yeah, so they had 12 Irish full internationals started. They had, I think on the bench, they had another three or four, and they were missing Furlong, Henshaw, Sexton. And they brought on Cian Healy and who's the other one? Conan? That's mental.
That talent is spread amongst fewer teams.
Yes.
But I don't think if you had an equivalent number of top England players in an English side, I don't think they'd be able to compete at that level.
No, because the difference is, of course, up until recently, and I know this is the stick that everyone beats the ORC with, but there is a ring to it, that it rings true in that the Leinster, for example, their squad's ridiculously depth they've got. Yeah. I mean, they've got 70 players probably, if you look at the full squad with all the juniors and all the other people that sort of sit around it.
Chatting to some of the Leinster guys last night, and this one table that I sat with, they were very clued up and were very much against the argument of Leinster, got all the money in the world and doesn't have to worry about salary caps and things like that. They talked in great detail about their academy and kind of their breeding ground for success. And they have just got just this constant conveyor belt.
Yeah, because there's only four teams.
Yeah, I know, yeah,
there's
I know
only four teams,
gonna...
and they probably get half of all of it.
Yeah,
you know, and the other half is split out between the other three.
The other big difference is those top players only have to play 15 games a year.
Yeah,
they be doing that, might we, with the league going down to 10.
But you're right, yeah. Snow. Yeah, I mean, I agree. Sorry, if you want to just expand on that.
Yeah, Well, I was going to say, you know, 15, they're going into every game like it's a cup final almost, you know, well prepared, fresh, hit every game full beans because they're really only playing the Championship Cup games if they're important. So they're already dropping players when it's Championship Cup games that aren't that important. The odd game just to keep freshness right when it fits with their training schedule and hitting the internationals, which is completely different from. I mean, you look at the Gloucester side, absolutely decimated with injuries, had to put in more than your average 80 minutes worth of effort against Saracens, and then expected to follow it up again the week after, and with a much smaller squad because, of course, you have to manage the money with the salary cap. So it's much more challenging being a Premiership rugby player, without a doubt.
Yeah. I mean, just as an interesting aside, though, and I thought this during the game, I might be proved entirely wrong, and it'll turn out that we're going to put like a kids team out against Bordeaux. But the fact we did withdraw Val, Chris Harris, even George Barton, Freddie Clark, Kirill, I mean, pretty much the entire, so McGuigan went off early as well. My thoughts are, look, we now know that we are level on points with Racing. In win ninth, they're eighth. Top eight go through to the last 16. A win in Bordeaux, realistically, based on all the other fixtures, should put us into the last 16. I got the feeling that with what we've withdrawn players, etc., and I know whether we're going to compete in the last 16. That's by the by. What I'm saying is, it's an opportunity. We put our first for 15 out, our best 15. Bordeaux, realistically, even if they beat us, probably aren't going to qualify for the last 16. So you're looking at those fixtures, you're looking at those things. I think it does bode well in terms of the team we're going to put out in Bordeaux. Now, you can argue long term, is that the right strategy? Should we really be focusing on Exeter and Quinns coming up? But you know, your views on that, Jim Snow.
Yeah, I'd sack it off completely, and I don't normally say that. I always think you should, especially European Champions Cup. But we literally have our team aren't very good, right? We literally have no hope of getting far in it. There's not even like money making opportunities from getting to a decent round and getting good crowds in. It's almost like the only reason we put out a half decent team is to respect the tournament, which is a waste. The tournaments, I think you're going to go into this in more detail anyway. Yeah. Completely screwed up because we're playing the top team and the worst team, and we just have to beat the worst team to get through.
Yeah.
which is absolute nonsense. But when you look at the Premiership is so weird this season. There's fifth place. Bear in mind, there's only 11 sides. It's lost as many games as they've won.
Yeah.
You can get as high as third, having only won as many games as you've lost. So it's really, really, really close, which means that even though we are not playing well, and I'll probably go on to this in a bit more detail later when you let me have big rants that you've missed out on for the last few weeks, we've got a massive chance in the league because teams around us are very inconsistent as well.
Yep.
So I'd really be focusing on that this season. I could see us getting top four because we're in top four without even playing well at the minute because teams are winning and losing so many games, and on our day with a full squad we can beat anyone in this league because the strength of the league isn't that strong. So I would see this as a huge opportunity to get something out of this season by focusing on the league.
I don't disagree necessarily. I think if this was a chance to get a home tie in the last 16, I think you might, just from a commercial point of view, want to push it a little bit. But We're not.
Is there a chance of us getting a home tie? I don't think there is there?
No. No, no. So the highest we can go is sixth. So we would end up playing, realistically, again, looking at the fixtures and who's got who, the expectation would be that Leinster are playing Racing last game. So Leinster are playing Racing, and we're playing Bordeaux, and we're level on points. I'm not sure Lyon and Castres have got, but looking at the fixtures and etc., you'd imagine Leinster, they'll want top seed. They'll want last 16 home, last quarter, you know, quarter final home. That's what they want to go for.
Semi final at home,
final in Aviva, you know, away we go. So they'll want all of that. So Gloucester, realistically, if we were to finish sixth, we're going to be playing. I mean, it could be anybody, but we could be playing Munster, we could be playing Stormers away.
We have the worst points difference by minus 35 points.
Yeah, because we've got the hammerings between. Yeah, we've got the hammerings. That's the problem, and you just can't really, you can't legislate for what's going on. But I think Bordeaux are there to be beaten. Just my personal opinion.
Yeah, because they're one of the three worst teams in the whole tournament.
Yeah, I think they're there to be beaten. I think Gloucester, if we put a decent side out and play fairly good rugby, I think we'll give them a good game. Will it be enough? Maybe. I don't know. I think I agree with you, Snow. It's one of those things. I do kind of agree. Is it in the long-term interest of the season for us to get to a last 16 game, say, against the Stormers, have to travel all the way to South Africa for a weekend, get absolutely hammered, come back? You know, is there much benefit from that? I don't know.
No.
Probably not. Jim?
I think if we get through to the last 16,
yeah,
then I think we need to take it seriously and put in the best squad we can, which probably isn't particularly good at the minute, but the best squad we can. Because I think if we're playing anyone other than the top sides, and hopefully we wouldn't quite be playing the top side, I reckon we'd have a chance of winning. And then if you win that, then, you know, it's money in the bank, isn't it? It's a bit of kudos. I mean, and it actually helps us with the seeding in future years as well, does it not?
Probably. I mean, I don't know. They haven't confirmed what system they're going to go to next season yet.
No.
I totally get
we should concentrate on the league, but at the same time, I think if we can get another couple of games out of this competition, then that, you know, that's a good thing. I did read earlier today, JP, friend of the pod, is convinced that we're going to be up against Stade Francais in the Challenge Cup. I'm not sure quite how he's worked this out, but he reckons we're going to be up against Stade, and then if we win that, then we'll be against Cardiff or Po, but then we'll be away again. I think
there's a lot of permutations yet to come. I'm looking at those Challenge Cup. We'll come on to that in a second, actually.
Judging by how Racing played today, in a game that they definitely shouldn't have won.
No.
we can have another chat about refereeing decisions later in the pod, I would hope. But some really, really kind of fantastic play from them. And then at the same time, they were kind of doing some of the stuff that Leinster do and looking fantastic. And then they were knocking it on a lot. So they were kind of, they were a bit of both. Quinn's looked all right, actually, in part. I think Marcus Smith's looking sharp, so that's good for England. But were Racing good enough to beat Leinster? No. So you wouldn't have thought. They might get a point. They might score four tries. You know, they might get a bonus point. But are we really competing with Racing for that eighth spot, or is there's a couple of other teams really, aren't there?
Well, it's, I mean, if you look at, So if you look at the group as it is, Lyon have got 3 points. They're going up from Castres out. I don't think Castres can physically, so, or I suppose they could technically get into the Challenge Cup, but Castres have got 0. Bordeaux have got 2. Lyon have got 3. Gloucester and then Racing are tied on 5 points, but Gloucester's points difference, as Snowy mentioned, is significantly worse. Quins have got 7. And then Bulls have got 10. And then I think then everything above that technically have qualified for the last 8, and it's just positions. So it's really between, and you're looking at who's playing who, and I'll come on to that in a bit. It realistically, it's between Gloucester, Racing and Quins for those final 2 places. And who's, obviously Quins are going to be at home. Racing and Gloucester are away. And then Lyon technically, I suppose, could qualify with a big win. But I think they would be at home. And then you obviously got Bordeaux. So, yeah, it's... but let's move on to just quickly to the Challenge Cup. Not that we really care too much at this point, but there is a chance that we might end up into this competition because of the weirdness.
9 and 10 in the pool.
9 and 10's both dropped down. It's only 11 and 12 are out. Now, as I mentioned before the pod started, in Group A... Pool A of the European Challenge Cup. Top 5 teams, so top 6 teams qualify automatically. The top 5 in Pool A have got 15, 15, 14, 14, 14. The 6th place team has 1 point, as does the 7th, 8th and 9th, and Newcastle have got 0 points. So there is almost certain that one of the teams will qualify from the Challenge Cup with no wins, which I think sums up entirely how stupid the format is, Snowy.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what else you can say about that. It's absolutely nonsense. Do you remember when the Heineken Cup was in its sort of heyday?
Yeah.
How hard it was to get out of a group. It was the knockout stages were always the top teams because it was so tough to get out of the group.
Yeah.
And it almost feels like it's a step down from the Premiership now when you're playing European rugby. And okay, you're playing some class teams like Leinster, but it's like it doesn't feel like the same build up and the same standard as it did. Like either you get smashed by a team that's far too good for you to be playing, or you're smashing a team that's rubbish, and teams are putting out, you know, they're putting in some young faces, or they're switching out some of their key players, which in the old Heineken Cup you never saw. That they were the biggest fixtures of the entire season. I think it's taken away from it a bit, and I know that they're experimenting with lots of different formats at the minute because there's lots of issues around making sure that teams can survive and that wealth is spread around all the clubs and bringing in the South African clubs and stuff. But it just feels like a bit of a disjointed mess.
The interesting thing we're talking about, like how clubs can survive, and then you bring in the South African clubs, which basically forces every single club that plays them to spend an absolute fortune going over to South Africa, and they have no fans. So neither. I mean, all right, you probably get a few South African fans in England because there's lots of South African expats in London, etc. But it just seems just counterproductive. It's not for the fans. It was obviously all about cash for the broadcaster and then for the clubs, I suppose, from that. But long term, it doesn't seem sustainable in the format that it is. I don't see the benefit of bringing South African sides. I don't know anybody who actually does, other than maybe the South African sides. And I'm questioning whether a few of them care that much themselves.
Well, their air miles are mental. I mean, they were going on about in today's game because the Stormers were playing at London Irish, and they played Glasgow last week in the URC.
Yeah,
so they'd come down for that, and then they're flying back to have the home game, and then they're coming back again for another game. And you know, them being in the URC is bonkers enough. I mean, I assume they've got their own blooming plane or something. Certainly shares in something. It's just...
hopefully shares in a forest somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, carbon footprint
is incredibly environmentally unfriendly.
Yeah.
Maybe I can see like the short-term benefit for these players is they're getting to play a much higher standard of rugby, and this is great for them. But
well, good. I'm glad we're developing South African rugby.
Yeah, I don't see like long-term, like after a year, they're going to be, or their families are going to be, oh right, you offer another month to play in Europe, are you? All right, see you then. You know, players aren't realistically going to want
but
that.
Still they're get paid in rand.
I mean, you were saying about the old pools, the old Heineken pool, Snowy. Mm. I mean, you used to remember you'd have the proper group, proper pool of death, and you'd have some really strong French team and your Munster or your Leinster, and you'd be like, bloody hell, it's going to come down to points difference or bonus points.
Try scored or whatever, yeah.
And then, we've got Viadana. Yes, we've got a chance that if we come second, we'll be one of the best runners up. Because basically, back then, it was Benetton and Treviso that were the whipping boys, weren't they, of the competition. And basically, you knew that the best runners up would come out of the pools with the Italian teams, because that was like 10 points guaranteed against them. So, Benetton are a lot better than they were. So
well, they're second in their Challenge Cup pool now.
Yeah,
Benetton.
But then it's now down to league, isn't it? It's not down to country, it's down to the league. So actually, you don't, potentially you do get all four Irish teams. You might not get either of the Scottish teams or either of the Italian teams making it, because they don't earn their spot through their league, which makes it, well, it's not European anymore anyway, is it? But it makes it kind of less countries involved.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing, because it's about quality. But it makes it less of a spectacle when basically they're trying to work it so that you don't play a team from your own country in your pool.
Mm.
So you go, well, we'll be going to Ireland and France every single year, won't we?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm just looking at the URC now, and a bit like Saracens' total dominance of the Premiership, Leinster have won 12 out of 12.
They're not used to losing, are they?
No. I mean, one thing I would say, and I mentioned it on Twitter yesterday, that there's no blame attached to Leinster. Leinster are playing within the parameters that have been set for them. They've got an incredible player base. They've got amazing funding. They get a lot of favours, I suppose, if we're talking about Champions Cup rugby. I mean, it is a farce that anytime they have a serious knockout game, they play at the Aviva. Which is just farcical. If you're going to make him play in Ireland, play in bloody Limerick or Belfast or something, let's make it slightly challenging for them. But fair play to them. They play an incredible brand of rugby. It was actually enjoyable watching a very, very good team play very good rugby yesterday. Unfortunately, it wasn't in cherry and white or pink, as it happened to be. It was in like a very nice royal navy blue. Well, I don't know. I'm colorblind. Whatever blue it was. Fair play to them. I say the two tries they scored, the short ball off the line out and then off the 5 meter pick and go, was absolutely amazing. And I think if the daft thing is, if Gloucester played, I don't know, half as good as Leinster did yesterday, we would walk the Premiership. that's the level. I mean, even I think Saracens would have got a tonking yesterday with Leinster playing at that level.
And you know what? That kind of leads on to the rest of this competition.
Mm.
I will enjoy watching Leinster for the remainder of this competition, because I think any game that they play in will be a real spectacle. I look forward to them really, really being tested against some of the other top teams, because I think there's the potential for some apps. I mean, Saracens Leinster, that could be an interesting game if that to happen. Certainly, Toulouse Leinster, I mean, that would be one heck of a game, wouldn't it?
The one thing I did think, I mean, we'll sort of finish this part of the pod on the one area that Gloucester really did have dominance up until probably towards the end, which I wasn't entirely convinced what was going on. It looked like Kian Healy was cheating like nobody's business, but there we go. The scrum, particularly when we had Val and Carell on. I mean, bloody hell. If I was an Ireland supporter, I would be mildly worried that your scrum, basically your scrum, got taken apart.
Yeah.
Systematically. And it was nice to see the Gloucester scrum go that well. Unfortunately, we the opportunities it created, we didn't do anything with. Again, the line out and the maul is not, we got two penalty tries, but again, the line out is not functioning anywhere near what it needs to be. But it was, you know, I was looking at that game yesterday and I thought, if you're an Ireland fan and you're looking quarterfinals of the World Cup and it's going to come down to very fine margins, getting pinged off the park in scrum time is not ideal. And I think whoever's going to be coming up against Ireland at that point, they will be targeting that scrum every single time.
Yeah. And Ireland, Leinster.
It's an easy mistake to make, Jim.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen a scrum half put the ball in to the number 8's feet before.
Oh, yeah. Gibson Park was, by that point, I think he realised, look, the only way I'm going to get out of this is if I feed it so much.
It was just ridiculous. I mean, I'm convinced it didn't actually enter the tunnel. I think it entered at the second row's feet at an angle to the 8's. Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah, the other area I thought, which was quite disappointing, again, French refs, joué. I thought some of the reffing of the breakdown was a little bit, a little bit to be desired, I thought. I mean, there was at least four or five occasions. I think he pinged him eventually, but there was at least four or five occasions where Leinster, every single one of their players went off their feet. And then when Gloucester looked like they were going to counter-ruck, there were Leinster players coming in. They weren't coming in from the side as such. They were coming in from the Gloucester side. That's how much they were coming in from the wrong angle. Yeah. And the ref just didn't pick it up. And, you know, my only assumption there is, look, Leinster had the dominance. They were going forward. Refs looking at it and going, do you know what? They've got the ball.
Yeah,
let's play on.
And that is the big problem, I think, especially with our scrum dominance.
Yeah.
It was like, well, actually, we should have got more penalties. Mm-hmm. There were quite a few free kicks that should have been given. There was a warning given to our front row, and then Leinster collapsed, and then there wasn't a warning given to them. It was very much the team in the ascendancy just gets to carry on being in the ascendancy, and they will get found out by a better scrummage, a better team that has also got an half decent scrum.
So that's their Achilles heel, isn't it? Yeah. Right. We're going to pause now. We're going to move on to all the stuff that Snowy's missed, and we're going to get his opinions on these. God knows what they are, because there's so much to go through. And we'll also talk about some of the incidents this weekend, from Henry Slade to London Irish to Quick. How many people got sin-binned for wrestling today, Jim? Was it six?
It was three at the end.
Yeah. I think there was six in total.
Were there three previous to that?
I think so. Four, at least eight. I'm sure it was five at least. Anyway, but we'll come on to that next.
Hi, this is Chris Harris, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Right. So we'll just quickly just follow up on that, my last point in the first part of the pod, which was the Racing Quins game. And it was a bit chaotic towards the end, I have to be honest, wasn't it, Jim?
It was a good game. It was an entertaining game, some lovely running rugby. I thought a lot of what Racing did was really kind of special, but then they didn't quite have the execution that the likes of Leinster do. No. There were quite a few knock-ons. Finn Russell knocked on his 22, trying to catch a kick, whether he was looking at the player coming in to make the hit on him or whether he was looking at the line. I mean, I think in that situation, if you think you might just about be in the 22, you shout mark. And if the referee thinks you're in, you get it. And if not, he'll say play on. But there was a lot of mistakes, but my God, you know, I think there probably should have been even more yellow cards. I, there was a hit on Dombrandt off the ball that Austin Healey was going on about that I didn't see in live play, and they just there were no replays of it at all.
Oh yeah, that was the famous it's French TV director.
It's a red card.
Yeah, French TV directors at their best again, wasn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, whether a sighting will come out of that, who knows? But yeah, it was a little bit bonkers, and I just think, much like Gloucester struggled to at the moment, Quins did not manage the final 5 minutes of that game at all. You know, all they had to do was catch the ball at that one at the restart.
Yeah.
And to be fair, they got penalised when there were two guys that released and back on their feet in through the gate on the ball. And then they got pinged for not releasing. So, and there was something else as well. I think it was Dombrandt that was asking the referee to look at something, and basically the referee said the TMO's not for that. I'm like, yeah, but when you're wrong, and the TMO can tell you you're wrong, and that kind of that just leads me on to my kind of issue that's been ongoing for weeks and weeks and weeks now. Is we need, not only do we need far, far better kind of refereeing interpretation across the board, so you don't get massive differences from competition to competition or from nation to nation when it comes to officials. But yeah, the TMO should be able to say a lot more, should be able to put things right. We had it yesterday, didn't we? That yep. There was a scrum to Leinster. Because was it
a blatant massive knock on, huge knock on
because of a knock on,
yeah.
And it's like, well, we didn't knock it on, what are you on about? And then clearly it came from the TMO. Oh, actually, yeah, you got that one wrong. And there was another scenario, I can't remember exactly what it was, but we got a free kick at this resulting scrum because clearly the referee realized they'd made a mistake again. It's very, very easy, isn't it, just to give a quick, free kick at a scrum to make sure the ball goes back to where it's supposed to. But yeah, you know, the TMO is there, can see stuff, can check stuff. I mean, the try that London Irish scored, the London Irish scrum half scored, because the ball was on the line and therefore he's not offside. And like he got the guy got subbed immediately after because he was about to knock the referee out. He was that incensed by it. And you know, it's like, well, come on, TMO. That is where you just go, actually, mate, you got that wrong. He wasn't offside because the ball was on the line and it's a try. You know, and if a TMO can't interject when it's the difference between a try being scored and a penalty being given against, you know, when can they?
No.
It's bonkers.
So I think that brings us on, Snowy. Now, again, interesting. I don't know what topics you particularly wanted to go for, but should we start off with TMOs and refs? Because obviously we didn't get to get your view on the incident last week with Saracens.
Yeah, I'll do that first. So the format for this, because I've been really good and prepared, is that...
I'm glad someone is.
Yeah, well, so I actually haven't prepared. So what we're going to do is it's going to be a AMA Q&A.
Okay.
So basically you fire a question at me and I'll off the cuff give you my somewhat exciting. Cynical wine-fueled response.
Go on then. Right. So anyway, can I help the TMO? TMO, yeah.
Yeah. So generally, I think the referees and TMOs have really upped their game in the last year, 18 months or so, and it's been very consistent, apart from, of course, the absolute shambles at Saracens. So, I mean, there's a few different ways you can break down what went wrong. I actually think the blame lies completely with the referee. And I think the fact that he's tried to scapegoat the TMO is pretty disgraceful. But what the TMO has done is at their first look at the incident has said there's a chance of foul play. Now, what you can do, Dixon, is slow everything down. There's no need at that point in time to think, bear in mind there's a stoppage in play as well, that he suddenly has to rattle along with the game and the tempo of the game is suddenly more important than getting the decision right. And he's not given himself a breather to say, hold on, right, let's just be sure about this. Let's go double check it. Because he hasn't seen it. He doesn't know what it's about.
No.
I mean, it was bad. It could have been worse. Because what he's done is he's completely limited himself by saying to the TMO, with a terrible choice of words, was it in the same play? Was it in the same phase, I think he
same
said.
Same phase of play. Yeah.
Which is even worse.
Yeah.
To which she correctly said, no.
No. Or I don't know, no.
Or I don't know, as you even said, yeah. Well, it wasn't. It wasn't the same phase.
No.
So, you know, how was she supposed to answer that when you haven't even asked the right question? And then without thinking, hold on, is this something I should just slow down, go and check? And if it's actually in a different play, so if there was a stoppage in between, he can then say, I'm sorry, guys, look, I can see it. It's a clear issue, but I just can't give it because of the rules.
Yeah.
Fine. But he's made a snap decision with no information whatsoever. And of course, it was a terrible one.
Mm.
And then quickly onto the sighting. I'm not so like pitchforks and everything as some of the cluster fans have been. You know, talks of having the game replayed or the
that was farcical, wasn't it? Yeah,
just an absolute joke. Like that's not how it works. It is frustrating that when something like that isn't given in the game, all your opponents get to benefit from the sighting that then happens.
Yeah.
You know, that is crap. And I do actually sort of think the result of the sighting was probably bang on.
Yeah.
Because as much as it seems like Farrell is always hitting high and has poor technique and everything, his actual history of red cards and sightings isn't significant. And those guys, they're not idiots, right? They're taking facts into account. They're not taking the heated opinions of a shedhead. They're looking at data and facts and saying,
why
right,
not,
these are our,
Snowy? Come
these
on.
Are our rules and these are our constraints. And this is where we put it.
Yeah.
You can't give him six. What, the max was six, wasn't it?
6 weeks entry point, yeah.
And the idea is that, right, you give them a max if they do it all the time, there's no remorse, it was really super dangerous, you know, they don't want to go to tackle school, all the different things that play into it. So I think they did sort of get it right. Yes, of course, it's convenient that he's then available for England. But it also lines up with the reality of what's going to happen in that situation based on his history.
You know, the whole playing for England and it managing to be before the ban finishing before he... That's kind of one of those things normally when it happens and it's like a week out, 2 weeks out from the Six Nations, and it's that obvious that they basically went, oh, no, it's not that bad. Yeah, you'll be fine. Yeah. You know, we'll give you a week ban. That's when it's really obvious. This one, I think, was fair enough. I agree with you that the way that the process showed the process and that the ban was the right ban in terms of the entry point, in terms of, you know, they noted previous issues that was included within the ban. That's why it wasn't reduced further. I did laugh at the bit at the end, which I said, did it have any impact on the game?
Yeah.
It's just like, yes, fucking did.
Well, surely the rules for saying whether it had an impact on the game is what contribution did that player have from that point on?
Yeah.
I think
2 minutes later, winning the
kick,
yeah.
Goal,
yeah.
Probably is quite a
fairly,
quite a
fairly sizable impact. Yeah. I mean,
and have you seen the letter that the RFU wrote to Saracens? In the last
about the fact that I did see that, which means he's
they
now eligible
said,
for England. Yeah,
yeah, you don't need to come to training camp this week, so you can play for your team. Oh no, you can't play for your team because you're banned, but because you could play, because we said you could play, now you are free to play for England.
Look, I'm not saying I'm not his biggest fan either. Most people aren't, but he is a very good player. That's why he's had so many England caps and has played for England so long, and. Just because he rubs people up the wrong way doesn't mean that he should be treated differently.
No. But I think he should be. And I'm definitely with Andy Goode when he's calling for independent adjudication on bans. It's not right that the RFU decide the ban on an England player. It's not right that Scottish rugby do the same for theirs. It's not right that South African rugby, you know, why
yeah,
not
it's,
have...
It's too big a conflict of interest.
A,
England win and they benefit financially from England winning.
Yeah, so it should be World Rugby, totally independent. They should have a group of however many are required, and they do discipline for the world, like professional level.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I agree with that. Your next question then, Snow, it's actually come out today, and you kind of got, I like your honesty and cynical opinions on these things. So it's come out today that apparently Ealing are looking to sign, or have signed, depending on how much you want to believe these things, Billy 12 Trees and Geordie Reid. Yeah. Now, there's a significant proportion of people on social media, on Shedweb and on Gloss's My Home Facebook page, who are very, very disappointed by that. You're not one of them, though, Snow.
No, I mean, 12 Trees has been an absolute servant of the club. He has got us out of trouble. He's like always 100% committed. Like, you know, like any player, he's not always on top of his game, but he's the one thing you can't say about Billy is that he's never off the pace in terms of like the level of effort that he's putting in. He's club servant. That said, he is clearly at the end of his club career. He's going to be looking at other opportunities to extend his career. He's not playing many games for Gloucester, wouldn't in the future. And I'd imagine there's a limit to how much you can reduce someone's salary. And at some point, he would have been on quite a high one. So I'd imagine when you're looking at salary to value, it absolutely makes sense for both parties that he moves on. Because I'd imagine what we would offer him to stay would be very little, and Ealing are probably paying quite well as a sort of key player.
And I think he'd fit in. Yeah. He'd fit in like as that almost coach on the field type player. That Ealing, you would imagine they're going to have a lot of youngsters in that squad.
It's perfect exactly signing for Ealing. It's just one of those. Sometimes you see those swaps and you're like, yeah, it just makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of calls saying, oh, we should give him a coaching role at Gloucester. I was like, well, if there isn't one, you can't make one up just to try and keep him. And like we sent value, he's not going to be that value that he would be for Ealing, and therefore be worth Ealing paying more for. And he'd be stupid not to prolong his career.
And then Geordie Reid, well, we look at our back row, right? We got Mercer coming in. We've got Pledri, we still don't know what's going to happen with, but still potentially is a world-class talent. And Geordie Reid is visible. That's his redeeming feature. He gets about, you see him, mainly when the ref's giving him a yellow card or a penalty against him, or flying out the line when it's poorly timed to tackle. And he works hard and he's involved and he is visible. But I think one of the problems with Gloucester fans is we don't set our standards high enough. Like, we're really happy with a tryer sometimes, but it's like a tryer ain't good enough for us to win the league. We've got to make some sort of ruthless decisions and make sure that we're getting world-class players in where we can, but also that everything is constrained by the value factor. Like value is everything in Premiership Rugby Union, and that is right. How much are you paying that player? How many games are you likely to get out of that player? So are they committed internationally? How much can they influence a game? All these things factor into how much value you can get from an individual, and the quality that you've got elsewhere in the squad in those positions also factors into that. So I've got no idea what money he's on, but I'd imagine if we're getting rid of him, he's on a chunk, and it's a nice little way to free up the cap considering some of the players we're bringing in.
It's also important to note that you say you're bringing in Mercer, who is world-class, as you say, and has been tearing it up consistently for the last 2 years, basically. You look at the academy squad. That back row. So you look at the back row, and you've got. I think we're all kind of the same opinion that Ben Morgan probably will be off as well at the end of the season. That seems to be what's going to happen. So you then got Pledri. We don't know what Pledri's situation is going to be. It might be only a year. It might be 2 years. We don't know. Tuasui, Ackerman. But then you've got the likes of. Harry Taylor who's played quite a lot this season, Blanca. Freddie Thomas, very highly rated within the club. You know, there's young lads coming up through the, and you can't block them with a player that might be playing. You know, you can't block them by paying a player who's going to play 6-7 games a season, maybe. Particularly if you, you know, it looks like he's, I know he's injured, I think there may be injuries as well involved. But as you said, at times he's a walking penalty magnet. And it, a lot of it's because, as you say, Snow, I think some of it is he's very visible. So in one way, him getting over the ball or him going in for a ball in the ruck is a little bit more obvious than, say, somebody else like Val might be a little bit. And also, technically, is he as good as Val over the ball? Probably not.
No.
You know, if, I have some sympathy with the whole ethos about like, oh, we like those hardworking fan favorite players, but you're right, we have to be a bit more ruthless, probably. And I think that the idea that we've got to be a bit more circumspect with how much praise we give certain players, yeah, it's an interesting one. Maybe we're too hard on some players, though. That's the interesting thing. There's certain players that we probably are a little bit too hard on.
I think we used to be really hard on Ludlow.
Yeah.
Because and I think we were right to realign our harshness on him because he's improved.
But then, yeah.
But we also, I mean, Ludlow's a really interesting one as well. I think what we're getting out of Ludlow now is that he plays pretty much every game.
Mm.
He's not a flight risk for England. So he's a captain that is always there and always around and consistent. And I think there's a lot of value in that. Do I think he's the best back row player in the club, let alone in the Premiership? I think he's some way off that. I think he's an effort player. I think he's great at chasing down kicks and leading by example. But I don't think he's physical enough. I'm torn on him, really, because I'd like to say he's one of the first names on the team sheet from captaincy, but I think we're lacking some captaincy in some respects as well, some late leadership. So, yeah, you two might have different views to me. Yeah. But
well, no, we're talking about back rows, you know, and there was some talk on Twitter today, I think, about Hinckley, who's now at
Northampton.
Now at Northampton. You know, we let him go because we just had so many really good back rowers. And you know, even now, I said, you know, yeah, he's doing pretty well. I think he didn't go to Saints first. He went somewhere else first.
He went to Exeter.
Yeah. So
and it didn't work out down there for him. No, I think because so, Exeter played a totally different style of rugby, and he wasn't able to adjust at that point.
And that's what we've got to realise is that Geordie is in that unfortunate position, if you like, of being a back rower, and there are bloody hundreds of quality back row. You know, Premiership standard back row players. So if he is on a, you know, a fair chunk of change, then, like you said about value, well, we'll have one of these academy lads that'll be on a lot less and probably offer us just as much.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you've got, you know, you're not playing the academy players anywhere near as much, even if they're class, because they know they have to earn a few years in the Premiership before you can start to up their salary, or they need to have other clubs coming in. And then there's the competition element and they can get their salaries raised. So you might be getting 95% of the quality versus another player, and you're paying them 30% of the salary.
Yeah. And then that money
up.
Saved
yeah.
is then all of a sudden you can get the likes of Zach Mercer, or you can get some superstar fullback like Santi or you know, whatever. You know, you've got to balance. You've got to balance the books. You've got to balance the squad.
These Argentinians are probably the best value decision we've made over the last couple of seasons, because I'd imagine their pay for their quality is quite low.
Mm.
Yeah, and you only lose them, the good ones, so like Santi and et cetera, you're only losing them early season because of the autumn internationals, et cetera. You don't lose them around Six Nations time. So that's always a big bonus there.
Yeah.
Moving on again, booing kicks, Snowy. Because again, are you? Do you care really?
I do a bit, so I don't mind it if there's been a like an outrageous decision and the crowd are still worked up and there's noise around a kick like that, I don't mind that. I think that's just sort of atmosphere and stuff. But when it becomes sort of just routine, I think it's a bit boring.
Boring.
It's just like, it's not very bright, is it really? I also think from a kicking, I also think, you know, I kicked a bit playing rugby, not a lot, but kicked a bit. Deathly silence in a ground of, you know, 25,000 people. That is what makes you absolutely brick it before you kick.
Oh, that's what Jim said about Munster, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wouldn't affect me at all. That would help, if anything.
It's interesting. I mean, I'm not one who will boo, as I said last week. I think this idea that it's some sort of solemn thing that everyone has to do, it's a bit much because not all countries do it. And I think you just get on with it. I'm not saying that we necessarily have to do that every game. I mean, it was very respectful yesterday. Not that it wouldn't be, because it wasn't a really contested game, but yeah, I mean, you know,
I think it's good to have heated games, like rivals that you hate, and when they come, like the atmosphere is different. It's like heated and everything. You know, it can still be respectful.
Mm.
You know, I'm not saying meet in the car park outside half an hour before the game, but when I think about the games that we've won that I've gone to that have been like against those sort of teams, they're the best experiences you have, aren't they, as a fan? Mm.
Yeah, and I, it's weird because I was thinking about this the other day about big games that we kind of remember, and I'm not sure that although we got the 64-0 win, whatever it was last year, I'm not sure if I have that in my top wins over Bath.
No, that 7-5 win in
2007 or whatever it was, yeah.
Because that's about, it was like intensity, wasn't it? Like smashing each other, like the atmosphere building slowly over time, like a proper game. Absolutely smashing someone is great fun and we should do it as often as we can. But it's not quite the same feeling when you go home in the evening to James Hook's kick against Saracens.
Saris, yeah. Yeah.
Or when we beat Newcastle with the whole Rob Andrew thing. And you know, you want that drama attached to the game.
Yeah. Jim, I don't know about you. What I mean, you know, just sort of talking about top threes and games and stuff like that. Do you feel that Bath game last year? I enjoyed it, and I thoroughly enjoyed the experience. And that, but it for me, it's more of a, it was good fun, but it doesn't have the same impact or meaning as other games.
Yeah, I'm totally with Snowy on this one. It's the ones that have got a little bit of previous, maybe. Mm. So there's loads of kind of talk, it's been talked up a lot before the game. You mentioned the Rob Andrew affair. I mean, that was just an absolute classic.
Mm.
The old racism allegation thing. Yeah, so when there's more to it than just league points, you know, like proper, not just bragging rights, kind of just real importance, they're the ones that you like. You go into it and say, we simply have to win this one just to shut them the hell up. And then there's obviously the ones that go that way, go the other way, you know, and it's like the score lines yo-yoing. And then you just about come up on top, and you know, if there'd have been another 5 minutes, you'd have probably conceded and been behind. They're the ones that it's really, really good. When you actually feel that Gloucester are in control, and they've timed their run to the finish line to perfection and all that, they're the great ones. Not that I can ever remember anything. My memory is absolutely pickled, but yeah, they're the ones that kind of that feeling of relief and satisfaction and everything. Yeah.
Final thing of the pod this week. Let's talk about how crap their ground is again, because Gloucester hosted two European a European Champions Cup and a Challenge Cup game this weekend, as the Rec was flooded. Not necessarily Bath's fault. We've had a lot of rain, as many of you know.
It's next to a river.
No, it was the entire ground. And it's not as if they didn't know about this, and they've not had plenty of opportunities to build another stadium somewhere that isn't next to the river. Gloucester hosted the game at King's Home in And fair play to the team at King's Home. Another game within 24 hours. I've noticed a few times now in the last couple of weeks, the press are very complimentary about the catering services at King's Home these days.
Well, I save some money there then.
Yeah. I put on Twitter, there's a lot of faux outrage about Gloucester's team that won out against Leinster. There's been a lot of interesting selection choices from a lot of teams. But when you're ground is a glorified park pitch with no covered seating, is that really acceptable in the 21st century?
It's not great, is it?
No.
But I'll tell you what's even worse is how slow Bath were to call it. And
yes,
they'd messaged their stewards to say, yeah, the game's cancelled. It would be, stand by for further details. But there were supporters like, I need to get on a train, I need to get on a bus, what's happening? And that, I think, was very, very poorly communicated. And I don't really know what the attendance was at King's Home today.
The shed wasn't open.
No, I think they only went in the main stand.
Main grandstand.
Yeah, because I looked, I looked at the link for tickets. It was 30 quid adults, 10 quid juniors.
Kids, yeah.
And I was like, well, you could have done a season ticket deal for Gloucester season ticket holders.
I did think that.
For a fiver.
Yeah.
Just to get more bums on seats and more pints and pies sold. But I was a bit surprised because I'd have probably gone if it was really cheap.
I mean, it's probably a Toulon home game anyway, but it would have definitely been a Toulon home game if you'd had 4,000 Gloucester fans turn up.
Yes, quite. and I think there were a lot of Leinster fans that I was speaking to yesterday. You know, they were like, oh, yeah, that could be good. I'm still around in Gloucester. You'd have probably had, a few hundred Leinster supporters who were still drinking from the night before pile in just because it's a rugby match. But what I'd really like to know is how the guys got there. Were their coaches put on from Bath? Because obviously all these Toulon fans, you'd imagine they were staying in Bath and the surrounding area. So they would have had to get to King's Home, which on a Sunday...
Yeah, not ideal, is it?
Ain't the easiest thing in the world to do. So fair play to them for coming. But I'd like... I feel really sorry for those Toulon supporters, because no doubt there's quite a few Toulon supporters that never made it to King's Home to see the game after travelling to Bath to try and see the game.
I mean, I don't know. I think a weekend in Bath has its own...
drawbacks?
Well, I think there's plenty of stuff to do in Bath, but you might not necessarily need a trip to watch the rugby. I think,
Are you suggesting that there's a load of Toulon fans that had a weekend in Bath, didn't get to see the game and still had a really good time?
Yes, I think I am. I know that my parents a few years ago went to watch Gloucester play Zebra or Palmer, whatever it was, and didn't actually go to the game. They just went, sod it, we're just going to stay in Bologna because it's nicer, which is fair enough. Talking of which, final thing is I'm off to Bordeaux at the end of the week. I think...
Yeah, I'm looking at flights.
Well, yeah, that's the problem though, Jim. I think I'm off to Bordeaux. The French, in their Frenchness, have decided to go full-on yellow vest, strikey, strike, strike. And Thursday, apparently, is going to be almost like a national strike. Now, according to the relevant press I've read, it does say that it ends on Thursday. But I've also read there is a possibility they might just randomly extend it to the Friday as well.
Strikes for what?
Name it. Whatever you want to have. Well, no, it's because Monsieur Macron wants to, and the French government want to increase the pension age from 62 to 64. So the age you actually take your pension. Now, obviously, we've been through all of this in this country, and there was a little bit of unpopular opinion on that one. But of course, the French worked very hard for their doing sod all for in a week, so they're fighting hard to keep it. But basically, it does mean that anyone who's travelling to Bordeaux on Thursday, I don't believe there's any issues with the air travel at this point. It's just what happens when you get to France is the issue.
You have to get in the hold and get your own luggage out type scenario.
I think the issue is that it's transport within the city is the problem. Now, Bordeaux is quite a big city. They do have trams, nice, wonderful public transport in trams. The problem is I'm not entirely sure if it'll be working on Thursday. I am, from what I've read, it does sound like they are going to be back at work on Friday. But again, it's the French. You never know. So there is a possibility that this is going to cause a bit of a problem for Gloucester itself, because Gloucester, I believe, are flying out on Friday morning, and then they're flying back Sunday morning, I think, after the game.
How do you know this?
Because I got an email from the rugby club. Jim, you may have had something similar, offering tickets and it was like a package where you can join the players.
I suppose. If they've chartered a flight, you might as well fill the seats.
Yeah, so they've chartered a flight. That's fine. And they were going to be flying out with the players, and you go on the captain's run and all this stuff. And mine's, my memory of it was you flew out on the Friday, you came back on the Sunday.
No, I think it was just a one night.
It might even be one night. So you actually flew back on the Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I think
possibly
so.
In the Saturday evening. It might even be one night. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a possibility. But yeah, we'll see. For those who aren't going, this pod will be released as we're recording on Sunday. Will be released tomorrow, I think. If I can get my editing sorted. Apparently the KSM bar is the Connemara in the middle of Bordeaux, according to none other than Bob Rumble himself. He's told me that that's where it is. But there are plenty of other places I'm sure you can frequent. And if you're wearing Cherry and White, you'll bump into other Cherry and Whites. Jim, what flights have you found?
Not very many.
No.
yeah, they were all a little bit expensive, if I'm honest. Mm. So I don't think I'll be going.
No, I think you might have left it a little bit too late. This is why I need to. This is when me being involved is useful, as Snowy will testify. Gets annoyed with me trying to plan things out 2 years in advance. But the reason I do this is because then he doesn't have to worry about it and everything, and it's all sorted.
Well, I used to be so good, you know, literally within 10 minutes of fixtures being announced, I would have flights booked. I mean, you were exceptionally good because you booked hotels for three separate weekends.
I did, yeah.
And then cancelled two of them, which is, yeah, that's good. So I definitely, especially if we go back to a proper pool, which I think everyone knows we're going to be going back to next season, definitely need to get back in routine of doing the European trips, because they're fantastic.
They're very good fun. They are good fun. Snowy, one final thing for you. Obviously, last game of the season this season is Bristol away. Well, last proper regular game of the season this season is Bristol away in May. My suggestion is, on the basis that we can't really do any other away trips because you were about 2 days back from Vegas when we played Sale, would be, do you fancy that, Snowy? Do you fancy Bristol away?
What's the date?
May something. I can't give you the date right now, but I know it's in May.
Then I can't say whether I fancy it or not.
Hang on a minute. I will have a look now. So it will be, because they've changed all the fixtures, and that has meant that some of the away games are slightly more exciting than they were going to be.
It's May the 6th, but our conversation yesterday, Ed.
It's the same day as the coronation.
It's the coronation day.
Yeah.
So I've got a sneaking suspicion that rather than clash with the coronation and the fact that it's a bank holiday weekend, they may well move, because obviously all the fixtures will kick off at the same time. I think there's a bit of common sense might prevail, and they might have all the games on a Sunday or, you know, a Friday night or something. But
it's Premiership rugby and they haven't noticed it's the coronation and they're just going to kick off anyway.
Yeah, and I don't know what time the coronation kicks off, whether that's, 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. thing, so it wouldn't. But you'd think, for TV purposes, they probably don't want to be.
I don't know. I don't know, Jim. I think I've got a feeling that we could be on by that point where we would have had a build-up of about 3 weeks of the bloody thing. I think people might be a bit sick and tired of it.
Oh, let's put the rugby on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Either that or it'll be... the only way that the coronation would probably get one over the rugby is if we had a full-on stand-up fight outside in the car park between Wills and Harry. Yeah.
I think Kate and Meghan would be a better scrap, to be honest.
But that's because you're a misogynist, Jim.
No. I just think they. I think there's a bit more hatred there.
Don't go behind a pub with him. That's the key.
Yeah. Oh no, that's true. Don't go behind a pub with Harry. That's a good point. Good point. I think on that note, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, guys. As I say, I'm in Bordeaux next week, so we will record at some point. We've also got a special pod coming out in the next week, which is my interview with Alex Popham. And also Tom Morris, who is one of the lead guys at Progressive Rugby, talking about concussions, head injuries and things like that. So we've got all of that. Some of you may know, but there is a possibility of a very, very special guest at the end of the season. We won't say more at this point, but when we do have it all date in the diary, it's definitely one you need to tune into. And I'm almost sure that one or two of the lads might join me with that one as well.
Yeah. By the way, when you're in Bordeaux, so on the cycling podcast, when they do the Tour de France, yes, they do the podcast from a restaurant where they're eating all the French food and you've got all the atmosphere and stuff behind you. Why don't you do a live review of the game podcast after the game?
I will try my best.
In the noisy KSM
In the
bar.
noisy Connemara or the Houses of Parliament bar is the other one I found. Because that doesn't scream class, does it? You know. House of the Parliament bar. Well, we could always go Frog and Roast Beef. I don't know. I'll have a look, Snowy. That's a good idea. My technology might not stretch to that, but I'll see.
You could do a 10-minute one.
I could do, couldn't I? I could have a chat with my brother-in-laws and father-in-law. That could be a good one. Yeah.
Up here for thinking.
Cheers, mate. Right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Cheers.
Yeah. Bye, cheers, bye. Guys. See you again soon.